The correct answer is C. Your client has the right to have this information kept confidential. C states, inform your client of her options. A. Urge your client to leave her husband is incorrect because even though this may be one good option of your client's, it may also put her at risk and she may not be ready to make such a move. B. Work with the client to document the frequency, magnitude, and duration is incorrect because your client has more pressing issues of self-protection. And actually, answer B describes the taking of a baseline measurement for making future progress in behavior modification therapy. And this is obviously a low priority at this point. D, interview the husband, is incorrect because this course of action will reveal to the husband that your client has informed you of his behavior. She had indicated that this might pose a threat for her, and this course of action is very likely to be ineffective and actually to cause some violent behavior on the husband's part. To give you some added insights into the confidentiality dilemma as they relate to your agency, let's look at four lawsuits in which patients allege breaches of confidentiality. Now, each case will be followed by an ethics audit question for you to think about. The first case is Beringer versus the Princeton Medical Center. Beringer, a surgeon at the Princeton Medical Center, was diagnosed with AIDS. Beringer's chart, which included several references to the diagnosis, was kept at the nurse's station on his floor with no special protection. His condition soon became widely known. Beringer sued the hospital for its failure to take reasonable steps to protect his confidentiality. The ethics audit question for you here is to think about what precautions do you take regarding your agency's records and what are your confidentiality procedures. Let's look at case number two, Velasquez versus St. Clair's Hospital. Now, this is in Kings County Supreme Court in New York. Velasquez was admitted to St. Clair's Hospital while she was running for election for the U.S. House of Representatives. Copies of her medical records were distributed to the press, which reported on them. Velasquez sued the hospital for breach of contractual and fiduciary duties of confidentiality, for wrongful disclosure, and for negligence in maintenance of security of medical records. The ethics audit question that you might ask yourself is, do you have any high-profile clients that might attract entities that would be highly motivated to acquire records? Case number three, Doe versus Methodist Hospital, Hancock County Supreme Court, Indiana. According to the complaint, Doe had tested positive for HIV. Doe disclosed his HIV status to paramedics when he was taken to the hospital after a heart attack. The paramedics noted his status on their report, which became part of Doe's medical file. Hospital employees revealed Doe's HIV status to his co-workers, and Doe sued the hospital and some of its employees for invasion of privacy and other wrongful conduct. The ethics audit question here is to think about any of the clients that you may have, and are they former employees or do they have another connection with your agency? Also, later in this home study course, when it talked about the fact that the paramedics indicated on the records about HIV, we'll talk about e-care and the use of computers and how many physicians are putting patient data into computer database and the insecurity of the internet. The fourth case is O'Connor versus Rutland Medical Center. This took place in Vermont. O'Connor claimed that on two occasions, different hospital employees discussed her medical condition without her consent with her husband and her ex-husband, and she sued. So the ethics audit question here is, what is your confidentiality policy in discussing information with family members, relatives, and significant others? For Module 5, let's look back at ethics in a burn victim's desire to die, and the different definitions and perspectives of incompetent to make decisions. An unmarried 26-year-old man, who we shall call James, was severely burned when he and his father set off an explosion from a leaky propane gas pipeline. The father died before reaching the hospital, and James sustained second and third degree burns over two-thirds of his body. He is now blind in both eyes, although he might possibly be able to recover sight in one eye. After 9 months of treatment, the tips of his fingers have been amputated. His hands are useless. He cannot get out of bed by himself, and the burns are still not healed. In order to keep the open burns from becoming infected, James must be immersed daily in a bath of antiseptic solution. The baths are preceded by injections that make James unconscious, but the dressing of the burns after his bath is still quite painful to him. James is an intelligent and articulate young man. He has persistently pleaded to be allowed to leave the hospital and go home to die. He says that he will not wait to die a natural death from the infection that would begin in the open burns, but would take measures to end his own life if sent home. He has recently refused permission for further surgery on his hands. The physician has called in a psychiatrist with the intent to have James declared incompetent, but the psychiatrist has concluded that James is rational. James's argument for wanting to end his life is that he has been an active person, has participated in sports, and is fond of the outdoors. He does not find enough value in living blind and as a crippled to make it worthwhile to endure the painful treatments and the problems of adjustments to his new life. James has asked the physician to help him get out of the hospital so he can go home and die. Now, the question is, should the physician honor James's request? Some of the factual issues regarding ethics. The physician must answer a number of factual questions before he can make a decision. One of the questions is whether James could adjust to his new lifestyle. James says he would never find life worthwhile living as a disabled person. But the physician has access to histories of other victims of catastrophes and will want to make a determination on his own of James's prospects for future happiness. The physician will also want to know the laws governing these situations. What can he do legally without incurring unacceptable liabilities for himself and for the hospital? Now, two important conceptual issues arise in this case. First is whether the proposed action is a case of suicide, and this is an ethical question, because James wants to end his life by some direct means. And out of concern for his own well-being, most people would consider his actions to be suicidal. A second question, which is more difficult, has to do with the concept of rationality. Now, ask yourself this one. Is James rational enough to make such a serious decision about his own future? The physician has to have a clear concept of what he means by rationality before he can answer these questions. Of course, factual issues can be raised here as well. The physician might have a clear concept of what it means to act rationally, but might still be puzzled about whether James is acting rationally. If he defines rationality as involving, among other things, making decisions on the grounds of all available evidence, he might still wonder whether James fully understands the degree to which he will be able to manage his own affairs at home. Nevertheless, having a clear concept of rationality is an important step in determining whether James is rational. Now, the point of bringing this into the home study course is just to highlight the fact that with ethics, there's a lot of gray areas and oftentimes not very many black and white, clear-cut decision areas. And if you recall in the beginning, in the introduction, I talked about ethics and talked about living mindfully rather than just by emotions. And I think this is a very good example of that. Question number 8. Let's go back to the duty to warn. While in therapy, Jill reveals that she is planning to physically harm another client, which she had met in a group that you conduct. Now, what's the best ethical course of action for you? First, the therapist should alert his or her supervisor when Jill reveals her plan to physically harm the other person. Or B, the therapist can do nothing because she or he is bound by client confidentiality. C, the therapist should first warn the other client. Or D, the therapist should first tell the police of her client's intention to harm another client.